Now the mind only school. Seems like you give thought to what we discussed yesterday. So what we do is that as we go, if it so happens that before we come to the path, if there's no concrete discussion happening as to how, you know, things are mere mind, then make sure that you remind me. Right? Remind me to do that. Okay. And this is really the most important thing. And if you simply finish the modern school without really touching that part, then that's really very sad and a great loss. Okay, so we go. Page 125. The presentation of the tenets of the proponents of mind only is in four parts as the other schools. Definition, sub-schools, etymology, and assertions of tenets. Definition. The definition of a proponent of mind only is a person propounding Buddhist tenets who asserts, a person propounding Buddhist tenets, which means someone who is upholder of Buddhist tenets, number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, who asserts the true existence, who asserts true existence. So this is second criteria. Of other powered natures, but does not assert external objects. So we see that there are three elements here. A person propounding Buddhist tenets, number one, who asserts true existence of other powered natures. So simply say, who asserts true existence, number two. Number three, who does not assert external objects, right? So we try to work with these three and see whether we get the complete understanding as to what Chittamatrans would be like. Number one, a person propounding Buddhist tenets means that someone who is not a non-Buddhist, right, tenet holders, number one. Number two, who asserts the true existence of other powered natures. So before I really go with this, I need to explain this part. What does it mean by other powered natures? In what context this other powered nature is explained? I don't know if I have already explained about this earlier, but surely we have to do it here. So say, just as, you know, we subsume, we categorize the entire phenomena into two groups, permanent and impermanent, right? So likewise here, the Chittamatrans, they do it, you know, in a different way, you know, as addition, you know, as addition to what the other schools do. So, in fact, this is not something confined to Chittamatrans we are doing. It is also what the Madhyamikas do. So anyway, everything that we can think of can be. So say, what do I mean by everything that we can think of? Can each one of us give an example of what I'm saying? Anything that we can think of.
Turkeys.
Cars.
Tango.
When did she get?
Memories.
Virtue.
Houses.
I would say the elephant in this house. Although it's non-existent, but still we can think of it. Think of it, right? So anything that we can think of falls, you know, can be grouped in three sets. Number one is, I don't know the terminology used here. Anyway, for the time being, I'll use my own, you know, translation. And then later on, as we go along, then we'll see what is the translation used here in this text. So the first group, we call it imputed natures. Imputed natures. Second one, we call it other powered natures. Other powered natures. And third one, thoroughly established natures. Thoroughly established natures. Three, imputed natures, other powered natures, and thoroughly established natures. So the second one, what is the second one? Other powered nature. Sometimes people translate it as contingent natures. Contingent natures. And yet others translate it as dependent natures. So literally, the first one seems to be more accurate. But, you know, it depends on how we use these words. Okay, so we need to know each of these three and then see if everything that it can think of, you know, falls into these one of these three sets. First one, imputed natures. Last time when we were doing Sutrantika school, I did mention to you, and it did come about, you know, the mode of existence, while explaining the mode of existence, there are two ways of existence. One, you know, 100% or existing purely by means of subjective, you know, causal operation, which means, you know, existing by the power of one's own previous causes and conditions, which is totally independent of a mind, right? Say, the table. Now, don't try to think of in terms of Chitmatra. We have yet to delve into it, right? So, take it in a very usual layperson's perspective. So, say, when you go out, the table will still remain there. But, you know, so this and that, the table is independent of a mind. And whereas, you think about a beautiful flower, you know, a beautiful blue flower in this house, and then immediately your mind is distracted by someone calling you. And then what happened to that blue flower? It disappears, you know. So this and that, as soon as the mind perceiving the object disappears, the object also disappears. Which means that one object, or there is one category of phenomena whose existence is by means of mental imputation. And another category of phenomena whose existence is by means of, you know, one's own causal operation. Say, the table, you know, it simply exists by means of its previous causes giving rise to the table. At the first moment of the table giving rise to the second moment of the table, and it goes on like that in chain, right? So which means that the existence of the table is independent of our thoughts, right? So this is on a very layperson, you know, language or level of thoughts. So now look, in the first category, everything which simply comes about through our mental imputation, in the first category, what is the first category?
Imputed
nature. Right? So there, everything which simply comes into being by our mental imputation, no substantial existence, no existence from its, you know, the from its substance side. So all these fall in the first category, the imputed nature. So now look, each one of us will give an example of this imputed nature. Yes, Kevin. Sorry?
A dream.
Question mark.
Uh-huh.
Next.
Car.
Sorry?
The car.
It's imputed. It does not exist, you know. If you leave the car over there, you know, we don't have to think about the car anymore. We simply, you can carry on with your work, but the car will keep on, you know. The first moment giving rise to the second, and it'll remain there, you know, in the fashion of impermanence, meaning that, you know, the first moment of the car giving rise to the second moment of the car, so we don't have to keep on thinking about the car in order to, you know, keep it there, you know. Yeah, so the car simply operates in its own way in order to maintain it, in order to sustain it, You know, our mind, we can take rest. We can do something else, right? But then what about the, you know, say, the elephant in this house? You know, we can think about it, and then as soon as you distract your mind, the elephant in this house disappears, you know? So it is not really there. It is what the mind, 100%, is mental imputation. So as soon as the mind goes away, it also disappears along with the mind, mm-hmm. right? So therefore, it is 100% mental imputation, right? Which, what else? Impermanence. Impermanence, question mark.
What about expectation?
Expectation, question mark.
A thought of a flower.
Question mark.
A diseased person.
Diseased person. This is quite close. Anyone? Okay, what did you say? Expectation. Expectation is a mental process. It's a mind. So the mind, it is impermanent. Impermanent means the first moment giving rise to the second. Second moment giving rise to the third. It has self-sustenance. And what about you? What did you say?
Impermanence.
Say the impermanence of the car, you know? You forget about impermanence, you are busy with your work, but the car, the impermanence of the car keeps on going there.
Why not the dream?
The dream is also a mental state. You say that, oh, you know, wonderful water, you know, juicy, the very delicious food of the dream. Means that, you know, it is not the real thing, it is simply my dream. So you reduce that food into your dream, so in the form of your mind. It's just one part of your mind, dream, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we don't get much.
But if someone has expectations, like
yeah.
when I think of what I expect of other people, I got
your point, yeah. Expectation can be interpreted, can be stressed to different meanings. Number one, expectation in terms of your own mind. Mind, you know, is described as expectation, which expects something. Number one. Number two, expectation in terms of the object. You know, object of expectation. It may not exist. Simply it comes to your mind. So this is, if you speak about the expectations in that context, in terms of the object of the expectation, then it's a wonderful example. Yeah. Okay, so Trentika, did we go to give more examples of, what examples did we give for the imputed, for thing coming to being by means of imputation? I think we did quite a lengthy discussion.
It seemed it was a catch-all category, everything that was
So the poor example, you know, we did the poor example, the cup and the what? The paper and the cup.
Yeah.
Right? The difference.
Yeah.
The difference between the cup and the paper. Where is it? I was trying to really ask you.
Yeah.
Say, this paper and a cup, are they different or they are same?
Different.
You said different. The difference between the cup and the paper, is it existent or non-existent?
The difference?
It is, yeah.
It exists, I mean it's obvious. Existent.
Is it existent or not?
Existent.
Where is it? On the table, say, last one, I remember very clearly, say, I have just put a cup and paper, nothing else on the table. So if I ask you how many items are there on the table, what would be your response?
Two.
What are they?
Cup and paper.
Just two?
Yes.
There are more, the three. The difference between the cup and the table, the paper as well.
It's there.
Yeah. Now look. So our natural thoughts tell us that our natural thoughts simply consider tangible, you know, thing. Not an imputed thing. But there are many imputed phenomena. It's not just these two. There are more. The difference between the two. But then I ask you, Where is this difference? If that is existent, where is it? You know? So then I was trying to, you know, hold off from the center whether the difference is in my hand or, you know, is it on the curb or on the paper. If you say it is on the curb, you know, it is on the curb, then don't destroy the curb. Simply keep it intact and destroy the paper. But the difference also is disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And if you say it's on the paper, again, keep the paper intact so to protect this difference. You know, difference of the cup and the paper, and it destroyed the mug, the cup. And again, the difference also goes away. So which means that this has nothing to do with tangible objects.
Mm-hmm.
It's something mentally created, you know, by simply having these two, and then mentally it creates what is known as the difference between the cup and the paper, right? So the difference between the cup and the paper, this is also one example of merely intuitive phenomena, right? Okay, and also last time when we were doing Sutrantic school, someone gave us an example. I see it's Alec who gave us the example of the uncompounded space. Okay, so if in case while we are about to finish Mandarin school, if I don't touch, you know, the two important things. Number one, as to, you know, what does it mean by the uncompounded phenomena? Number one. What does it mean by uncompounded phenomena? Number one. And number two, not only that, the characteristics of the objects are simply mentally imputed, but even the objects themselves, they are simply reflection of our mind. How? You know, so last time we were discussing about the table. The table, the usefulness of the table, or the, you know, the uselessness of the table. All these characteristics is so relative, which means it is how our mind imputed. However, then what about the table itself? Is it, you know, mental imputation or mental projection, mental extension? This is the question. We, you know, still remains. Unsolved. So these two, make sure that you ask me if I, you know, don't happen to touch these two and the Mandarin school is about to finish. Right? Make sure that you remind me. And I'm not responsible if you don't remind me. Okay. So, look. Okay. So, something which is not tangible, to tell you in short, something which doesn't follow the rules and regulations of cause and effect. Something which doesn't follow the rules of the cause and effect, you know? And which is not the ultimate reality. They should fall in the first category, the imputed nature. Because their mode of existence is necessarily by means of mental imputation. Right? Okay.
So is intangible synonymous with mental imputation? Is intangible synonymous with?
No. So therefore I put aside this one.
Okay.
The ultimate reality. Because this is not tangible, right? It is intangible. And yet it is not even mentally imputed.
Okay.
And this is also an important part. Note it down for future, you know, one of the points that you have to ask me in the future.
Mm-hmm.
As to why the ultimate reality, you know, why ultimate reality, the emptiness, while it is not, you know, following the rules of cause and effect, it is not imputed phenomena. In short, you know, ultimate reality, why is it not imputed phenomena? So this is also a question that, you know, we need to address before we finish modern school. Okay, so this is really very serious question, this point. And yesterday, Christina's question about law of causality, you know, if everything is simply mind, then how can you really account for cause and effect relationship? This is another serious question. So there are a couple of things that we need to deal before we jump to the next school. Okay, so the first one, the imputed nature encompasses everything that comes into being by mental imputation, right? Number one. Other parts phenomena or other parts nature encompass everything which follows, which are impermanent, encompasses everything which is impermanent. Okay. When we speak about impermanent phenomena, you know, now look, try to make things, say, what will happen to you? Say, if in your house you have lots of things, lots of, you know, items, objects, and you don't know where you have placed them, right? So they're all scattered here and there, not knowing, you know, which is where, right? So in that case, when you really need it, you don't get it. Whereas, even if you have many things, but you know, you are so systematic, you are so orderly, so you put everything in proper order, so that way, you know, you want a pen, you know, go to get it from this, and you want a cleaver, you get it from that, you know, everything is there in your mind, so clear, and whereas you do have everything, but your mind is unable to really comprehend as to where things are, right? So, likewise, the study of Buddhism and the study of the, particularly the tenet system, we should somehow be able to systematize everything in our mind, you know, so that everything is so connected, well connected to one another. Say, for example, when I speak about the other power phenomena, I was talking about impermanence. I was talking about the ones which follow the rules of the cause and effect. So you must be able to integrate these two, impermanence and the ones which follow the rules of cause and effect. You should be able to integrate these two. Then, you know, whenever someone's talking about law of the cause effect, you know, immediately you can bring in the picture of impermanence. And whenever someone's talking about impermanence, again you can bring in the discussion of the law of, you know, cause and effect. So that way you try to make a very coherent connections among all these different topics, so that, you know, your mind is really comprehensive, your thoughts are really very comprehensive and so clear in your, you know, reflective meditation. Okay, so now what is the connection between these two, impermanence and the ones which follow the law of cause and effect? Say, you know, when I say impermanence, it means something is changing. Something which is changing. Something is changing means that it doesn't really remain static, even for a moment. Which means that it changes from the first moment to the next. Right? First moment to the next. So this means that the first moment should be serving as a cause to give rise to the second. Again, the second will not remain as it, always like that. Again, the second one is also, you know, second one also changes to the next moment. Second one is the cause to the third moment. And third one is the result, and the second one is the cause. Second one is the result, and the first one is cause. You know? So, the impermanence can be spoken of only if there is a cause and effect relationship. Right? So when you speak about it, again, when you speak about cause and effect, the cause, you know, when it gives rise to the effect, the cause is no more there. Which means the cause has already undergone change. There is impermanence in the cause. And the result. The cause gives rise to the result. And the result will also give rise to its own result. Right? So, while the causes give rise to their respective results, they also, you know, they also undergo change. So without the change, the cause will always remain as cause. Which means it's not a cause. Cause, by very definition, it must give rise to a result, right? So which means that it should change. So, cause giving rise to a result and impermanence, these two are synonyms. Right? Okay. So now look, everything which is impermanent and follows the law, rules of cause and effect, fall in the second category. What is the second category?
Other
powers. Now you may wonder, don't be hesitant to ask me questions. Raise your hand. Why do you call these objects other powers? You know, don't be frightened. I'm not so, you know, fearful person. You can simply ask me. So they are called other powers because they coming into being, you know, they coming into being is because through the power of their respective causes and conditions. They coming to, for example, the table, you know, it comes into being by the power of something else, by the power of other powered, by the power of something else. What is that something else? Causes and conditions. Now you may have more guts to ask, then why do we call those, you know, those things like the difference between the cup and the paper imputed phenomena? So this is quite, it demands more, you know, discussion and also more profound explanation. Number two. And number three. What is number three? Thoroughly established phenomena, right? Okay. Thoroughly established phenomena encapsulates all the ultimate realities. All ultimate realities. Emptinesses. Seems like some of you want to ask this. Why emptinesses are called as a thoroughly established phenomena? Okay. Thoroughly established phenomena connotes something, you know, something which is so firm in nature, which is so firm. For example, impermanent phenomena, by the very definition, is changing, is not, you know, firm. And the imputed phenomena, again, you know, although it's not impermanent, it's not changing, but still it's not firm because it entirely depends on the mind. As soon as the mind disappears, you know, mind disappears in sense, as soon as the mind, you know, releases, the object disappears, right? Say, you are thinking of the elephant in this house, and then all of a sudden someone calls you, hey, it's your time for lunch. And then your mind, you know, changes the object. It releases the original object, the elephant in this house, and then picks up a new object, food, right? So that as soon as you release the first object disappears. So it's not like releasing the table and then thinking of the food. Even if you release the table and think of the food, but the table still remains. You know? Whereas the imputed phenomena, you know, as soon as the mind releases the object, the object also disappears. Mm. Right? Okay, but of course there is debate. Any debate?
So when you think of virtuous and not virtuous states of mind.
Yeah.
I mean, a virtuous state of mind comes up, you focus and you keep your mind on it, and the phone rings.
Yeah.
It's not no longer in the mind, the attention's turned to the phone.
Right.
Mental imputation.
Right. So what is your response? Anyone? So what I mean, what I said is that you think of the elephant in this house, and then immediately someone calls me, you know, it's time for food. And you simply release this object and picks up a new object, food. And then the elephant in this house, what happened?
Gone,
right? So if this is what you mean by imputed phenomena, then the virtuous thought says you are fully dedicated towards virtues, meditating on bodhicitta, you know, or emptiness. And then somebody, it's time for food. And again, your mind directs towards food. So that virtuous thought is gone. So is that imputed? Anyone?
Yes.
Imputed? No. So this is mind. Mind falls in the second category. All impermanent phenomena. Impermanent phenomena and other power phenomena, these were synonyms. So mind falls in the category of impermanent phenomena, right? So anyway, back to your the response, you know, is quite simple. When you say imputed, means it connotes object rather than subject, right? So when you say virtuous thought, it is the subject itself, not the object of, you know. You're not simply, you say emptiness. Emptiness is not virtue. Is it virtue? Yes, no?
No.
Are you sure? Yeah. It's not good.
Well, it's a permanent one.
It's permanent, it's not virtuous?
Emptiness itself, no. It's a state of existence, no, it's not.
Good. So, say when you are reflecting on emptiness, you know, because of this amazement in the understanding of emptiness, you have tears, you know, coming up. So, where is this virtue? Is this that emptiness, the object, or the mind which reflects on emptiness? The mind which reflects on emptiness, right. So that is the subject. The virtue is a subject, it's not the object. When you speak of imputation, we speak of the subject, in terms of the object, imputed by thought, you know? So virtue is the subject and not the object. So where is elephant in this house? Is this my mind or is this the object which my mind imputes?
It's the object.
Good. So this is, this rightly falls in the category of the imputed phenomena, imputed nature, right? Okay, then you might come up with a very strong debate. Oh, then what about the difference between these two? The cup and a paper. As soon as you release this object, will it also disappear?
No.
No. So, as per what I said earlier, you know, imputed phenomena connotes that. As soon as you release the object, you know, you pick up a new object, then the original object disappears. This is what I said. You know? And then at the same time I said that the difference between the mug and the paper, it falls in the category of imputed nature. Right? But it doesn't disappear. So this is a debate. Okay. So, I thought we are done with the other part of phenomena, and now we are thoroughly established phenomena. So this is ultimate reality, emptiness. Ultimate reality, it is thoroughly established. Thoroughly established connotes something so firm and stable, reliable, right? Thoroughly established. Say, okay, I'll not delve too much on this. So, we think about impermanent phenomena. They are not thoroughly established because, you know, they are changing. And the imputed phenomena, they are also not thoroughly established, you know, because they are not thoroughly established because they are dependent on thoughts. You know, thoughts. And the thoughts, they can change. So, as the thought changes, the object, the imputed phenomena as well, they don't remain firm. Right? So it is only the ultimate reality. And the question which I've always asked you to ask me later is why the ultimate reality is so firm and is referred to as thoroughly established phenomena. Right? Okay, this is the question that we're going to deal with later on. Now next thing. Now at least you've got some idea about, you know, how to classify, categorize everything that you can think of into these three groups. Right? So now look. Okay, now another thing that we need to discuss is here, is that out of these three natures, right, the first one, very strange, look. What is the claim of the Svetantikas and Vapashka in terms of, you know, in terms of the self-nature or self-characterized nature of phenomena? These two schools say everything that exists should necessarily exist by the power of self-characteristic. Mm-hmm. The two lower schools say everything that exists should necessarily exist by self-characteristic natures. Number one. Now whereas according to Prasangika, the highest Buddhist school, you know, everything that exists should necessarily be empty of self-characterized nature. Just the opposite. And now look, Chittamatra, it is somewhere in between. Saying that, oh, some phenomena exist as by the power of self-characteristic nature, and others not. So, out of these three natures, what are they? Impure nature, out-of-powered nature, and thoroughly established nature. So of these three, the first one, the impure nature, is the one which is empty of self-characterized nature, empty of self-characteristic. And whereas the other-powered and thoroughly established phenomena, these two have self-characteristics, right? Okay. And also, self-characterized nature and true existence. For Chittamatra, these two are synonyms. Self-characterized nature and true existence. These two are synonyms. Now let's see if the definition makes any sense to us. The definition of a proponent of mind only is a person propounding Buddhist tenets who asserts a true existence of other-powered natures. So other-powered natures referring to all the impermanent phenomena. So as I said earlier, true existence and self-characterized nature, these two are synonyms. Mm-hmm. So they say that, you know, the other-powered natures or the impermanent phenomena, they exist truly, right? They have true existence or they are self-characterized, they have self-characterized nature. So because of believing in some degrees of true existence, this disqualifies the Chittamatras from being the Madhyamikas. Because the Madhyamikas, they reject any degree of true existence. So here, Chittamatras, you know, as someone who believes in true existence, some degree of true existence, should be excluded from being Madhyamikas, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so this means that this part of the definition excludes, you know, the Chittamatras from being Madhyamikas. Now, what we have, what other possibilities we are left with? Vatpashikas, Sutantikas, and what? And Chittamatras, right? There are three possibilities left. And now let's see how, you know, the remaining part rejects the first two, but does not assert external objects. So this part, what does it reject? Are you sure? Are you sure?
Well, yes.
Why?
Well, you just said because both of those schools did assert true existence.
That's fine. I'm talking about this one. Does not assert external objects.
Oh, I see.
Be confident. Don't trust me. You're right. It rejects the Chittamatras being Vatpashikas and Sutrantikas. Because Sutrantikas and Vatpashikas both accept external existence. Yeah, you're right. Be confident. Right? Be confident in your answers. Don't trust me. Okay, so we see that, you know, any philosopher who, you know, belongs to the propounder of Buddhist tenets, and because of this, you're being excluded from the non-Buddhist tenet holders. And because of asserting true existence, you are excluded from being Madhyamikas. And because of, you know, non-asserting external objects, you are excluded from being Vatpashikas and Sutrantikas. So what is left? Chittamatras. So that is what is known as Chittamatrins. Okay, now next. Proponents of mind only are of two types. True expectarians and false expectarians. Okay, what do you get? What do you understand from this? Okay, this is quite an important thing. The difference exists between these two groups. Okay, let me put it this way. This is quite important, you know. So it's not necessary. I don't really expect you to, you know, get the full import of what I'm trying to explain, but simply make sure that you at least get something, even if it is intellectually just, you know. And then as you go along, you'll see that things will become clearer. Say, you are looking at this flower, right? A yellow flower. So we have, just look, don't try to simply think of it in your mind. Look at it. So that way you really have an experiential understanding, right? Look at the flower, and then you see a yellow flower. And what is that thing which sees the yellow flower? It is your eye consciousness. Eye consciousness seeing a yellow flower, right? So when you look at the flower, what do you see? You see the flower, number one. You see the color of the flower, number two. You see the external existence of the flower, three. Right? And there are all different kinds of things that your eyes, you know, see. However, let's simply pick these three things. What do we see? We see the flower, number one. We see the yellow, the color. We see external existence of the flower, or the flower existing outside. It's not here, it's there. You know? This is what is known as external. So again, as I said earlier, we should make sure that when you use these words, external, these things, don't try to philosophize. Make it as easy as possible. Right? Try to understand these words the way you understand in your reality terms. You know? Colloquial terms. External. Oh, I'm going to... something is there. Someone is there outside. Not inside. So this outside is what is known as external. As simple as that. You know, don't try to complicate unnecessarily. Okay, external. So you do you see the flower as though it's in your brain? No. So where is it? There's a gap between me and the flower. This is what is known as external flower, right? Okay, so see, we see three things. Now, next question. Out of these three perceptions, you know, simultaneously happening with your eye sense consciousness perceiving the flower in front of me, which of the three perceptions is wrong and which is right? Quick! Which of the perception of these three perceiving it from the point of, now from the point of view of Chittamatra? Now from the point of view of Chittamatra, you know? So imagine that you are...
The third one.
The third one is what? Wrong, right?
Wrong.
Which is right, which are right? Which is or are right?
The first two are right, the third one is
good. Okay. So this means that you belong to the category of the true expectarians. And I say all three are wrong. So I belong to the false expectarians. Yeah. Okay. So, what is being said here, you know, is that when you say, oh, this eye consciousness, when perceiving the flower, it has, you know, some degrees of the validity. Mm-hmm. And one part, seeing it as external, this is wrong, you know. So then you give some degree of truthfulness, some degree of, you know, some degree of truth in your perception, validity in your perception. So, the Chittamantra, although there are different ways of classifying the Chittamantras, you know, but one way of doing that is of classifying the Chittamantras by asking this question, which of the three perceptions is right? And if one says that all three perceptions are wrong, then you belong to the, you know, what?
False
expectarians. And then where someone says that, or all you, you know, who said that, oh, seeing the flower is right, seeing the yellow color is right, but seeing external flower is wrong, you know. So you give some degree of validity to, you know, to this perception. So that is, that belongs to the true expectarians, Chittamantrans, right? Okay, so now this is the issue. So of course, both these groups accept that because of perceiving external flower, it is wrong. Which means that the two share in common that the flower does not exist externally. Mm-hmm. But they differ in terms of, you know, whether your perceiving of the flower is wrong or right. Right? Mm-hmm. So this is internal discussion or internal argument. Right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so at least you got, you know, what it means by true expectation and what it means by false expectation. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. So expectation. Okay. Three natures.
Can I say mm-hmm. that the ultimate nature of the yellow flower is the Taoist
nature? Mm. Yes, all ultimate natures.
And the flower being a product is the...
The flower itself and the flower being a product belongs to the other powers.
And the fact that the flower is imputed in...
No, the flower is not imputed.
Because I don't see the latency.
No, it is not imputed. It is not imputed. The flower is not imputed. The flower exists so truly over there. It's not imputed. It's not like elephant in this house. Okay, I hope we will do more discussions, you know, on these things. What is imputed? Why the flower is not imputed, you know? So while the flower is simply the nature of mind, and still it is not imputed, you got a point? The flower does not exist externally, you know? It simply is a mental thing.
Then it's imputed.
No.
Oh.
We need to make distinction between the two. So, again, I'm not responsible if you don't ask this question to me later on. Don't say it doesn't make sense. At best, what you can say is that, at least to me, it doesn't make sense.
I do not understand.
Yeah. Who knows, you know, whether it's you're lacking the understanding or is your understanding more profound than this, you know. So, say, what? Prasangika.
Yes.
They would be so startled to hear this. This is their understanding far excels, you know, to the mantra. Because of which they don't understand it, right? Okay, whatever's the case. Next. Differences exist between these two groups because an appearance, now look, let's see. And now what is the difference between these two groups? An appearance, number one, an appearance of a blue patch as blue, blue flower as blue to an eye consciousness perceiving blue is the aspect. Right? That is the basis of debate between a true and false expectations. So this is the basis of debate. Whether that, you know, the flower, the blue flower, perceived as blue, is that wrong or right? Number two, true expectations assert that the appearance of blue as blue to an eye consciousness apprehending blue exists as it appears, you know, which means that it is right. The blue flower perceived as blue, there's no flaw in it. It is right. You know? It exists that way. And whereas the false expectations maintain that an appearance of blue as blue does not exist as it appears to an eye consciousness apprehending blue. It doesn't reject the existence of blue, but it rejects the blue, you know, existing the way it appears as blue. Right? Okay.
How does it exist then?
Very good question. So now I cannot shirk. Very good question. So according to the false expectations, if the flower, you know, the blueness of the flower does not exist the way it appears as blue, then how does it exist? Yeah.
In the mind.
Anyone?
In the mind.
In a mind.
But that's the way it seems to exist. It appears to exist in the mind.
And then
it exists in the mind? How are these different?
Yeah. Anyone who can help me?
Well, do we need to differentiate between what we're talking about perceived by the mind and eye consciousness, what the relationship is to each other? Because my sense is that the false expectarians do not, eye consciousness is not part of any of the mind.
What? Eye consciousness is not part of mind.
Yeah.
No, it is. It is. It is one of the major part of the mind. Okay, now hold on. Hold on. Say, each one of us has a magnifying glass, which is so powerful. And this flower, it fills the whole room through your magnifying glass. Right? Okay. So, imagine we are each one of us using magnifying glasses.
Mm-hmm.
1, 2, 3, 4, you have already. In front you have. 1, 2, 3, you don't have. Right? Okay, so say you are seeing this flower filling this whole room. Right? Now, what do you see?
Yellow.
See flower. What color you are seeing?
Yellow.
Yellow color. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Now the question is, Now look, you're seeing a flower, number one. You're seeing yellow flower, yellow color, number two. You're seeing externally existent flower, number three. You're seeing the flower filling the whole room, four, right?
Yeah.
Which is true, which is wrong? Which is true, which is wrong?
According to who?
No, so say, I see, do you need to really specify that? What is the real flower? Is this something which fills the whole room?
It appears to be filling the whole room because I have the magnifying glass.
No, I'm not asking how does it appear to you. I'm asking you which of the four appearances, perceptions is right and which is wrong. This is my question. Which means, which of the appearances tally with the reality?
All of them tally with reality except that it fills the whole room.
And the external reality?
Yes.
So, from the domain of the Chitta Mantra?
Yes. No.
Imagine you are Chitta Mantra.
No.
Don't imagine you as Prasangika.
Okay, false expectarians, none of them are right. All four are right.
No, forget about false expectarians.
Oh,
just simply think of yourself as Chitta Mantra, a genuine Chitta Mantra, devout Chitta Mantra.
The first two.
Okay, right. No. Now look, so from that perspective, you said that, the seeing it as a flower is right.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing it as a yellow is right. You know? Okay. Now, let's explore a little bit more deeply. Right? Okay. If you think carefully, first of all, the flower that you're perceiving, does it exist? I'm asking, the flower that you're perceiving, the giant size flower, is that existent? No. So the very flower is not existent. The flower that you perceive is not existent. How can you describe it as, describe its perception as the flower is correct, its perception as the yellow is correct? So if there is no elephant in this house, how can you say that, or perceiving it as, something is sitting on the table is correct, or, it's not sitting on the table is incorrect? How can you say that? The very basis of the entire discussion is non-existent. So all the characteristics associated with that is also deceptive. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You may not agree fully, but still there are some elements,
Yeah.
So look. So there's this, half. So this half is what this, false expectations are talking about. So say you are dreaming. You're dreaming in a new, in the center of New York. Is that New York, existent?
Mm-hmm.
How big is that New York?
As big as your dream.
Yeah. So when you ask how big is that, how beautiful is that, it's just your dream. So similarly, it's just your mind. You know? How can you speak about yellowness? How you speak about the floweriness and so forth? So it appears as a flower, not as a mind. It's wrong. Because everything is simply a mental extension. You know? So does it appear as a mind or as a flower to us? Yeah, so this means that when it appears as a flower, it means, it implies that it doesn't appear as a mind. Something which is outside mind, this is wrong. So therefore, appearing it as a flower, appearing it as a yellow, it's all deceptive. Yes?
Are the Chittamantras schizophrenic?
Sorry?
Are the Chittamantras schizophrenic? I see, no.
Amazing. You understand that? And then you will, you know, if you truly understand it, I don't mean to say that I understand it, but if you truly understand it, then, you know,
just
your admiration.
It can be either way. I guess what my point is that it seems like you can look at it from one perspective from the Chittamantra and it's this way, and you look at the other way and it's not.
So now look, I quite understand your point, you know. Now say, what would be your next question? What would be your next question? Just forgetting yourself as a Chittamantran. You know, what would be the next question? So this is the discussion that we have, you know, come to so far.
Yeah, well, mine is, how does anything appear then?
How does
Because if there's no flower there, why doesn't it look like an elephant? Why doesn't it look like a dog? How?
So the same question, to you. Don't ask this to Chittamantrans. I can ask a question to you, or you can ask a question back to you. Why not the, you know, say you're hallucinating. You are hallucinating of an elephant in this house. Why not you, you know, have the appearance of a dog rather than the elephant? Ask it to yourself. You know, before asking this to your children. Right? Okay.
I do have a dog.
Okay. So I would, you know, so I told you, what would be your next question? You know, if you're asked, if you're given a choice to get out of being a Chittamantran, then the question would be simple. How can you convince that things don't exist externally? If that is resolved, all these problems somehow will be resolved, one way or the other, right? This is a serious question. Again, don't forget to ask me. But don't simply think of putting everything on my shoulder. You also give more thought to it, and then, you know, you also come to help me. Okay, next. The above presentation is correct because both the true and false expectations are similar in asserting that blue appears as blue to an eye consciousness apprehending blue. Number two, they are also similar in asserting that blue appears as a gross object to an eye consciousness apprehending blue, and that blue falsely appears to be an external object. Right? Okay, let's do with the first and the second point. The above presentation is correct because both the true and false experience are similar in asserting that blue appears as blue to an eye consciousness apprehending blue. You agree or not?
Yes.
Right? Both the groups, they accept that when you look at a flower, blue flower, you know, the blue flower appears as blue. This is what the groups accept. Number two, they are also similar in asserting that blue appears as a gross object to an eye consciousness apprehending blue, and that blue falsely appears to an external object. Number one, within this second group, number one, the blue appears as gross object to an eye consciousness. You agree or not? When you look at the blue flower, you know, does it appear as, you know, a magical flower or as a very gross, solid flower? Yeah, or this is what is known as appearing as a gross, you know, gross object to an eye consciousness. This also both the groups accept. Now look, the next one. That blue falsely appears to be an external object. This is acceptable, right?
Yeah.
Or it appears as external, but, you know, it does not exist as external. Now the debate or the question, still we have number three. Okay, I think the author is going to deal with that part. Number three. Seems like this is more of the commentary rather than the root text. Okay, there's no harm. Number three. However, the true expectarians assert that an appearance of blue as an external object to an eye consciousness apprehending blue is polluted by ignorance. This we agree. Right? But that an appearance of blue as blue and appearance of blue as a gross object are not polluted by ignorance. Which means that perceiving blue as blue is correct. And perceiving blue as a gross object, which means something so solid over there, is also correct. Look, when you look at the flower, does it appear as though like whole flower is of the size of a small, very small particle? No, very big, you know. As though like millions of such particles combined together, you know. Okay, so this is what is known as the gross, right? Whereas the false expectarians assert not only that an appearance of blue as an external object is polluted by ignorance, now look, but also that an appearance of blue as blue is also in a wrong or polluted by ignorance, and an appearance of blue as a gross object is polluted by ignorance. Appearing blue as a gross object, meaning which is composed of, you know, millions of atoms and a sized object, is also polluted by ignorance. So what do you think? What would be your standpoint? Of course, you know, you have choice between the two. Because even among the true, genuine Chittamantras, we see that with growth. So, just see, you know, just give thought to it, and then see, you know, to which group you feel more in favor with.
True.
True Expectarian?
Yes.
Others?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
What about Venerable Sanjay?
I'm moving into false.
False, good. Kevin?
True.
Christina? Disney, she's not happy with both. Jealous.
Well, I'm vacillating. Right now, I'm leaning towards.
Oh, good. So this means, you know, somewhere. And Venerable Chuki? Between. Good. So this means you have really given thought to it. Okay, now, so say, Venerable Senki is one, on one side, and then Diana and Kevin and Prasangika, two of them on the side of, you know, true. And then Christina and Dallas and Venerable Chuki, you know, between. So, say, and so basically we have, you know, three groups and one group neutral. So, can we have some kind of, you know, debate? Or can you convince any, you know, just your own standpoint? Can you convince that? To the other side?
Well, I think what is throwing me is as soon as you put in that polluted or tainted by ignorance,
yeah,
from my mind, it alters not only the appearance of blue as an external object, but also the appearance of blue as a gross object.
Yeah.
So it's affecting not only the external object through my mind being tainted by this filter, but also the appearance of blue itself.
Why?
Because the ignorance that sees things as, once again, I'm trying to think of what a Chittamantra, I don't know what their definition of ignorance is.
This is actually, so basically, you know, ignorance is a mistaken mind.
Mistaken mind.
Yeah. Need not be ignorance, the final, the subtlest ignorance. Ignorance.
Okay.
Yeah. So by the way, my question to you, not only to you, to myself as well, is, would you say it is wrong on the part of the I consciousness perceiving the blue as blue. Is that wrong or right? This is the basic question.
I consciousness is correct.
So you belong to the true experience. So I'm asking to the false experience.
Yeah, it's correct.
Are you sure? It's correct.
It's correct.
I see.
And that the false experience also say that the blue appears as blue to the eye consciousness apprehending blue. They have also asserted that as true too.
No. So they say that to the eye consciousness, the blue does appear as blue. This is all right.
Right.
Yeah, this is all right. How they appear.
Right.
But that appears that way, but it is wrong.
Right.
So my question to the true expectarians, you know, is, right, say you dream of a very beautiful blue flower. Is that flower blue?
No.
I don't say hey. I say yes. It's not blue.
It's a blue flower.
It's blue?
Yes.
It's really blue? Your mind has color?
Yeah.
Does your mind have color? I see. Your mind has color. So never has any Buddhas in the past seen color associated with the mind. Color is necessarily, you know, associated with the physical object.
What color is your mind?
There's no color.
Oh.
So mind is colorless, you know.
The flower is blue.
Yeah, I'm asking, the flower that you dreamt in your, that you dreamt last night.
Yes.
You know. Is that flower?
It was a blue flower.
No. Is it a flower?
Oh no.
No, it's not a flower, right? What is that? It's just a part of your mind. It's part of your dream, right?
Right.
So it is not flower.
Right. No.
It has no form.
No.
It has no color.
Well, it was blue in the dream.
So it is not real flower.
No.
It's just your own mind.
Right, with a blue dream flower.
Yeah, blue dream flower. Is that blue?
Yes.
I see. The flower, you know, a flower dream, a dream of flower. Is that a flower?
In the dream there is a flower.
Oh, in the dream there is a flower,
yes.
But this is not a real flower.
Correct.
This is not a real blue.
There was
a blue, but this is not blue. It's not blue.
The real blue.
It is dreamt as blue, it is not blue.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It is dreamt as blue, but it is not blue.
Trust you.
Okay, so now look, you know, so this would be the argument from the false expectarians.
Mm-hmm.
So say in your dream, you dream of everything, you know, and yet when you wake up, you don't qualify these things as blue and these things.
Mm-hmm.
Because you say that this is nothing, it's not blue, they're just your own mind.
Yeah.
So similarly, everything that we have right now, while we are still awake, you know, everything, they appear as though so external and so solid outside your mind, as though like you are in a real state of dreaming, you know. So in true sense, as soon as you wake up, you see that your dream was just a dream. It was not really externally there. Similarly, when you realize emptiness, it is as though like you wake up from the dream, long, long dream, you know. Everything simply dissolves back in your mind. It's not in the sense that everything external, originally externally there, now dissolving. Not like that, you know. So now you discover that everything is simply your own mind, mental extension. Everything is simply your own mental extension, you know. It's not really that way. It is, in true sense, it's just your mind. So, the mind has no color. The dream has no color, no shape. So how can you describe dream as a blue? Something which is of green nature, you know, is blue, is flower like that. So similarly, which is very much like a dream right now, you know, everything is just your own mind. It's not really over there. It's not really over there. So how can you describe that, you know, as blue and so forth? Right? Okay. So this is the from the point of view of the debate from the false expectarians towards the true expectarians. Now the debate from the true expectarians towards the false expectarians. So don't you accept the existence of blue altogether?
Yeah.
Isn't there flowers? Isn't there blue? Isn't there, you know, the external world? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So all these external worlds, external sense, the world that we live in,
yeah.
are they not the result of one's own karma?
Yeah.
You generate karma? You know, all these questions are there,
yeah.
right? So it's a huge debate. So, since that it is an internal debate among the Chittamantras themselves, I don't think it is my responsibility to respond to all these things. So you discuss among yourselves.
So then how do the these folks make peace with that other powered nature of phenomena which are impermanent and rise due to causes and conditions?
The false expectarians.
How would the false expectarians then assert their side with that other powered phenomena as part of their assertion?
Very good question.
Yeah.
yeah. So, you know, the how the expectarians, the false expectarians, then account for the existence of the other powered phenomena.
Yeah.
You know? Very good question. Just
yeah.
okay, this is your question towards the false expectarians.
Okay,
okay, so let's go. Now let's see. Now, the next para. Therefore, the definition of a true expectarian proponent of mind only is a proponent of mind only who asserts that an appearance of a gross object to a sense consciousness exists as it appears. Which means, you know, they believe in the grossness of the objects. The grossness of the objects. The definition of a false expectarian proponents of mind only school, mind only is a proponent of mind only who asserts that an appearance of a gross object to a sense consciousness does not exist as it appears. Right? Okay. So, actually, our job is to at least understand what two of them mean. You know, not simply intellectually, trying to really get a taste of it.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get a feel of it. And then try to resolve it. And, you know, coming to the resolution is not something that can happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it will take time. So now, what I'm trying to, you know, tell you is say, if you believe, the question is, things, do they exist as gross?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the flower is gross. And this particle, you know, the dust particle. Oh, it's so subtle. The flowers grow. Do you think Chittamatrans should accept it or not? The table is gross, whereas the particle is subtle. Do you think that Chittamatrans should believe, propose this idea?
No. It makes no difference. The particle or the table size doesn't matter.
Why?
Because it's they're both
mental
yeah.
extension.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you belong to false expectation.
Okay.
So if that is the case, now the question is, you know, so some people, you know, because of their karma, they take birth in a place with enormous beautiful trees. And you know, that beautiful landscape and not crowded. Whereas, you know, other people, because of the lack of enough virtuous karma, they're simply born in such a crowded area where you have hardly space to, you know, walk around. So, don't you believe in the efficacy of these? These are all just,
yeah.
you know, you want to denigrate them? You want to simply reject these ideas?
I just keep thinking...
No, I don't mean to say that you have to really do it. I don't mean to say it.
It's a dream, then. They have one dream, they have a different dream. That's what...
I see. Okay, so this means that there's no trees.
No,
there's no house. They're all dreams.
Okay,
so this is from the point of view, you know. So false expectations, I'm not saying it's 100%. If you believe, go to a false expectation side, then there's a greater tendency that you go against the, you know, conventional norms.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe in the false experience standpoint, then there's a greater tendency for you to, you know, reject, for you not to go in conformity with the conventional norms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is that you have to say that, oh, the flower, it, although it appears as yellow, it does not exist as it appears to your mind, like that, you know, which is totally against the conventional norms. Whereas if you belong to the true experience, then, you know, you are in greater conformity with the conventional norms, but there are more serious questions that you are prone to go against Siddhamatran's views. You know, I don't mean to say that you go against, you know, but there is a, you know, probability that you can slide down into, you know, going 2 hours far away from Siddhamatran's view, saying that, oh, there's a flower, the flower on the table, there's a difference, you know, and seeing the yellow flower, it's a yellow, it's right, it's gross, and subtle particles, they're small, you know. So then the questions can be asked. Say, if you belong to the true experience, then when you dream of a table and you dream of a subtle particle, which is bigger? You know? So when you speak of dreams, these two are just same.
But when you're talking about actually seeing something with sense consciousness, that's different than dreams.
You're right. But be in the world of Chittamatran. Try to jump off from the world of our ordinary perceptions,
mm-hmm.
and try to jump in the pool of Chittamatran.
Yeah.
Right? So according to Chittamatran, everything is a soul-like dream.
Mm-hmm.
But then for sure, I'm not expecting you to, you know, to understand, really understand as to how everything is dream-like. You know, that we have to do. We are going to do that tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
I promise you. But I don't mean to say that I understand it. I'm still recording it. I'm playing what I recorded for my teacher. Right? And I leave it up to you to digest it. Right? So anyway, you came up with this idea. For dreams, there's no difference between a particle and a huge house. So this means something is gross, something is subtle, it makes no sense.
Yeah.
So this belongs to the false experience. So this is closer, you know, towards the Chittamatran views. But the danger is that it might go away from the conventional norms. And if you belong to the true experience, you come closer towards the conventional norm,
mm-hmm.
but there's a danger that you go away from Siddhamatran, right? Okay,
mm-hmm.
So our job is to, first of all, try to understand as to how things, you know, are really mental extension. Things, how things really don't exist externally. That we're going to do tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
right? And then I will leave it up to you. Once you understand something, oh, that's true, you know, what I see is not reliable. It's my mental extension. It's my own mental creation. So once you get a clue, you know, a tinge of understanding of this, it's your job then to choose, you know, to see whether true experience is right or the false experience is right. Right?
So, when you were saying, you know, the tendency of the false expectarians, is that also a tendency that they would err on the side of being nihilistic? Because then they, if you carried it to that extreme that it wasn't there, then you could say, well, it doesn't really exist, nothing exists.
Oh, no, mine exists.
Nothing external exists.
Oh, true. So it's not just false experience,
okay.
It's also the true experience.
Okay.
True experience. Both share the common idea, share in common the idea that there is no external existence. Okay. Now, let's finish this part. There are three types of true experience. Proponents of the equal number of subjects and objects, half agist, non-pluralist.
I'm an egghead.
Okay. So say, this is quite, you know, This is quite interesting. The first one, equal number of subjects and objects. Say, when you look at a flower, now look, just look at the flower, really, do it. Look at the flower. So you see, you know, one flower here, one here, one here, one here, and the yellow part here, and the green part here, the glass, and the water inside, you see everything.
Yeah.
You know? So the person says, equal number of subjects and objects. When you see, just as there are varieties, numbers of, you know, different kinds of objects there, seen simultaneously, you know, by your consciousness, say there are, you are seeing 100 different objects there, there should be 100 different subjects here, subject mind.
Wow.
Right? So this is what is known as the equal number of subjects and objects. Right? One. Then the next one is the half egg gift. So what will happen to you? So it says there's just one egg, you know, and me and, you know, Kevin, I don't know whether we're going to fight over that or we're going to, you know, be kind to one another. We're kind. And we then divide into two, you know, make the egg, the single egg, just a single egg into two, and then half goes towards Karen and half goes towards me. So like that, you know, in true sense, what you perceive over there and what you hear, there's no diversity, it's just one, you know. So then what happens is that, as though the egg is divided into two, it simply is split into two. One as the object and one as subject.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 50% each. 50% each, yeah. Yeah. And then non-pluralist is, although there are, you know, diversity of objects there, seen simultaneously, but in terms of subjective mind, it's just one. You know? So say when you're dreaming of all these different things, but in true sense, there's no different things over there. You know? Non-pluralist.
All is one mind?
Okay, it doesn't mean, you know, just one mind. The mind, we should think of, you know, the first moment of the mind, giving rise to the second moment, third moment. So all these different moments of mind, they are different, right? But simultaneously, at one point, at one time, at one point at a time, you know, at a single instant of time, it's just one mind, and, you know, it's not that there are 100 different objects there, you're seeing it simultaneously, and there are simultaneously existing 100 different minds. It's not that case. It's not that way. It's just the same mind seeing all these things as diverse. Okay, so before we stop here, we have 2 minutes. Questions?
Yes,
I promise to answer it. Whatever question you may ask.
Could you give more examples of mental imputations? I'm still really lost between the elephant in the room, the subject object. Could you give some more examples of the
mental imputation? Mental imputation. Anyone?
An idea.
So if Venerable Sanjala is not happy, you know, I'm not responsible. Sorry.
Quality. Yeah, that's all for big. As soon as there's a mind comparing, then how would you say that something is big or
quite good, but still, you know, let's go for something. Yeah, I very much agree with what you said. Still, we try to look for something more concrete.
Because it says it doesn't follow the rules of cause and effect, and it's not the ultimate reality.
Yeah. So actually, you know.
That was going to be my question.
Without it being something non-existent, like the elephant in the room. I mean, I can come up with the, you know, the sword in the ground outside. I mean, I can come up with things in my fantasy that don't have any existence inherently or otherwise.
I see. So, Venerable Sankey is asking for something which is existent, and yet mentally imputed.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, is what Krishnendra came up with, the qualities. But the qualities also, you know, from Chittamata's point of view, some of them are impermanent phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So impermanent, will not fall in this category, right? So, what other things can we think of?
Space? No?
Yeah, uncompounded space. Uncompounded space. Space, there are two. One, when you look at a flower, do you see the flower right there in your eyes? No. It's there, you know, the flower and you, in between you can see the empty space. So this empty space which your eyes can see, this is the compounded space, not the uncompounded space.
Which one is mental imputation?
So, the one which the uncompounded one is the mental imputation. I think the best example by which, to understand this imputation yet existing is the difference, the difference between the cup and the paper. You know, it exists, but if you really try to locate it, it's not findable. You know, it's simply what your mind creates, right?
So just like similar.
Similar, this is also a good thing, yeah. Yeah, similar. The similarity.
Exclusive. Inclusive.
Yes.
Qualities that put two things in relationship to each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And also, the qualities like the essence of Atma. And say existence. So this let me put it this way. Just go to Vaibhashika's. Where is that? Vaibhashika's definition of the various things like phenomena, existence, and so forth. And then we'll do that, and then we'll stop here for today.
Vaibhashika?
Yeah.
Definition of things.
Which is able to perform function.
Existence,
object of knowledge. And things are mutually inclusive. Uncommodified phenomena are considered. Moreover, these five objects are things. The definition of a thing is that which is able to perform a function. Existent, object of knowledge, and thing are mutually inclusive. That is what I see. So the definition of the existence is not given here. Actually, the definition of, so say, this is, for the for the sake of our understanding, as to what it is meant by imputation and still existing. Say, what is meant by existence? Existence is defined as something which is established by a valid mind. Existence. The definition of existence is something which is established by a valid mind. Right? Okay, now let me ask you one thing. The mug or the flower, does it exist? Yes, it does exist. So the existence of the flower, I'm not talking about the flower. I'm talking about what? Existence of the flower, the existence. How do you know that the flower exists? So let me again put it, let me go from the beginning. Does the flower exist?
Yes.
Now my next question. How do you know that the flower exists?
I see it.
Because I see it. I see it. So if you want to put it even better, more well formed, you can say, I see by my valid mind. Valid mind. So, now what is the definition that I've given of the existence?
Established by a valid mind.
Something which is established by a valid mind. What you're trying to say is that the flower is existent because it is established by my valid mind. So this is what you're trying to... Established means it is established to be existing. It is established as, to be there by my mind. Okay. So now look. So now the existence. Existence. Does it exist?
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Yeah.
No? If existence does not exist, then non-existence should exist. You know? So, the existence does exist. Now the question is, what is the existence? Sorry?
What was the question?
Where is the existence?
Where?
Mind.
So now look, whether in your mind or external, whatever, you know? Now look, very interesting. When you talk about the existence of the flower, existence of something, you need to have the flower, number one. Number two, it's not just object, flower, because when you ask, how do you know that it exists? You said that, oh, I can see that by my that is mind. So in order to understand the existence, you need to have the understanding of your valid mind comes into play, and object also comes into play, right? But there is nothing which connects the two, this valid mind and the object. There is nothing which connects the two, right? Right? So there is no a laser beam like or a rope which connects the two. There's nothing. But without bringing these two, you know, any one of these two into this event, the existence makes no sense. Right? But nowhere do you really see that, oh, this is existence, or this is existence, you know? Nowhere can you really point to it. So the existence only makes sense to you when a mind is there, valid mind is there, and it establishes an object, right? So there's a connection made here. So what is this connection? Who made it? It's just your mind, you know? It's just your mind which connects your mind and object, right? So it is your mind which imputes that, you know, by considering this mind and the object, you know, connected by means of mental imputation, then you say that object exists. This is how you define the existence of a particular object, right? It's not, you know, so when I ask, how do you know that it exists? You're not really pushing me, or you're not really being so stubborn saying that it exists over there, it exists over there. You're not saying that. I can see it.
Yeah.
You know, you include this, your mind in it, to prove the existence. So the existence is not something that you see, but it's your mind which connects, you know, your mind perceiving the object, your mind is a valid mind, perceiving the object, you know, connect the two, and then say it exists. Right?
Yeah.
So in between these two, you cannot really locate to the existence.
Yeah.
If you try to, you know, grab something in between, you'll not get existence for flower. Right? So, whereas if it is 100% from the flower side, nothing to do with the mind, then when I ask, how do you know it exists? You know, it is my mind who sees it. You are not supposed to bring this mind in. So, the existence, you know, existence. Now, I'm not talking about the flower. It is there,
no.
But existence, it only makes sense when the mind, valid mind, perceives it. Right? Okay, so this is one example of imputation. Now look, I'm really very happy with this question because, you know, we have been trained by the samsaric afflictions in such a way that if something exists, it should exist so objectively, 100% from the object side, without mind, you know, imputing it. So this is how we are trained since beginningless until now. So we are so badly habituated in this thought, in this thinking pattern. Now we are to undo this. So to undo this, the Buddha came up with, you know, the various levels of various levels of unraveling this idea. So first one is the sotrantical idea as to how some of the phenomena can exist by mental imputation, not necessarily by 100% objectively. Right? Okay. So of course this is quite, you know, say one is a drug addict, you know. So or simply giving one lecture, these are the defects of, you know, taking drugs, you have to give up taking drugs, this Just by one lecture, the person cannot really change it.
Yeah.
You know? So likewise, simply by giving just one or two lectures on this is how things can possibly come about, the mental imputation. It cannot really undo that, you know, bad habit that we have cultivated since beginning of this time until now. So that bad habit of alcoholism, you know, that we adopted in this life, in this very short life, even undo that is very difficult. So now, not to mention of undoing that bad habit that we cultivated since beginning of this time. So, but it doesn't mean that, you know, we can really undo that. We can. Because, you know, because the bad habit is based on invalid thought. Has no basis on ground. And the new thought, the new habit that we are going to cultivate has a sound ground. You know, valid mind, wisdom, as a, you know, a support to it. So therefore, we can undo it. But for that, we need to really dedicate enough of our time and energy, give more thought to it. And then, of course, in our meditation, during your practice here and also outside, you know, when you have more leisure time, more free time, you give thought to it. Okay, let me stop here.